Welcome to In the Hive. I'm Roger McDonough. Today on the show, a new day for local journalism as the Salt Lake Tribune turns nonprofit, becoming the first legacy newspaper in the country to do so. We'll hear about just how uncharted this territory is, about the precedent it might set for other papers around the country, and about the challenges and opportunities on the horizon for the 148-year-old paper. We've got two conversations in store. First up, Salt Lake Tribune editor Jennifer Napier Pierce, who joined me here in KCPW's studios yesterday morning. Jennifer's not unfamiliar with nonprofit news operations, having been the news director here at KCPW and also at KUER. But newspapers have always had a certain structure, a certain model of operations, and they've got a storied history, both on the news side and on the business side. As you'll hear in our interview, though, Jennifer is excited for what the move means for the newsroom that she leads. Salt Lake Tribune editor Jennifer Napier Pierce, thanks for joining me.
Of course. Thank you for inviting me.
Of course. And to begin with, the Tribune is now a nonprofit organization, the first legacy newspaper in the nation to make that transition. And congratulations on the news. I know it's something that the paper has been working hard to achieve.
Yeah, I mean, it came a little faster than we expected, but right. We're super excited about it. And we think that this will open up some doors for sustainability long-term for the Tribune.
You said that. I mean, so getting nonprofit status happened with the arrival of this letter from the Internal Revenue Service that essentially approves your application. I take it that the timing of that letter was much quicker than you had anticipated.
Yeah, pleasantly so. I'm not complaining about it. But so we applied for IRS approval for two entities. One is a new foundation called the Utah Journalism Foundation, which we hope will support local independent news in Utah. And that was pretty straightforward. We applied for that in April. We got approval in August. And we didn't expect any pushback on that. But the transition of the newspaper itself was a little bit trickier. Our application, we considered it very carefully, kept it fairly open-ended so that people could perhaps use this model in their own way that fit something for their community. So we had in mind that this is a recipe that may not just be for us, but that other organizations, local news organizations, could tinker with. So,
and you said, when you say open-ended, I mean, you're talking about an application that said, we want to take the paper almost in its entirety, mm-hmm. nonprofit, just as it is, correct? Is that?
Yeah. So I guess other newspapers have made the attempt to transition into a nonprofit, but the IRS shut them down because they said that they didn't meet the requirements of nonprofits. And I think part of it might have been, I haven't seen other applications, but I've heard that, you know, part of it might have been that they were very specific on their case. Ours was, we have been a community asset since day one. And so, you know, we meet the educational objectives of a nonprofit. We absolutely, in our reporting, we're very local oriented. We are all dedicated to the public good, and so we should qualify under 501c3. And so it was a little bit of a gamble. We expected a bit of pushback from the IRS. We filed that application in May, and when it got to be October and we hadn't heard anything back, like, we totally expected some back and forth questions, and which would have been completely fine. You know, I think that we had a pretty good argument and a case to make, but that never came. And so our lawyers said, well, we haven't heard anything. You can probably expect early 2020, first quarter. And so that's kind of what we had been preparing for. The letter is dated October 29th, and we received it last Friday. So pretty quick turnaround and pretty surprising, but it's great.
It is a quick turnaround, and who knows what's going on behind the doors at IRS.
That's right. Yeah.
The Tribune is now a 501c3 nonprofit, which means that Paul Huntsman is no longer the owner of the paper. What will his role be now?
Well, technically, he still is the owner of the paper. The transition, because it happened faster than we thought,
okay.
We have not fully transferred complete ownership over. But Paul Huntsman, we expect in the next month or two, will transition from owner and publisher. He's giving the community asset to the new Salt Lake Tribune, Inc., which is the nonprofit. And it will be governed by a board of directors, just like KCPW. I mean, right. A lot of nonprofit news organizations are out there. This just happens to be have the newspaper piece to it, and that's what makes it unique.
It's interesting to think about the fact, I mean, the Tribune hasn't had anything like a, or has it had a board of directors before?
Nope. Okay. Well, I don't know in previous ownerships.
Sure.
I know that in 2013, Alden Global Capital, they may have had a board of directors. I don't know what their ownership structure was.
Good point.
And that was prior to Paul owning and buying the paper in 2016. He has been the sole owner and publisher. So I've only had one boss. So now I'll have to be responsive to a whole host of board members, which I'm excited about.
What will the makeup of the Salt Lake Tribune board look like? This might be getting into the minutia, but a quick sort of summary of what the Tribune is looking for on that front.
You know, we want a diversity of voices. Paul is very passionate and dedicated. He will remain on the board. He will be the chair of the board. But we've constructed bylaws where we want to add board members. We don't know exactly what that magic number is, but we want diversity in geography, ideology. The one thing that everybody needs to have is a passion for local news, because this is a community enterprise, and if you don't feel passionately about it, then you're not going to be much help to us. So we need board members who can be out there, be ambassadors, and really tout the virtues and the value of the Tribune.
Let's tackle some of the nuts and bolts of what's happening. I mean, what's staying the same? What's changing aside from, you know, having a board instead of just a single publisher and owner to report to? How is the paper going to change?
Well, I don't know. Our application was very broad, so we do not have to change anything that we don't want to content-wise, except for what federal law requires, and that is that we jettison our editorial endorsements of candidates. And I think that you talked with George Pyle about this last week.
I did.
Poor George. Anyway.
He's sad to see them go.
He is sad to see them go. And a lot of people are. I think that there was value in that. But federal law says a nonprofit cannot name candidates and tell you how to vote. So we're going to abandon that practice. And you know, the Tribune over time has had periods when they did not endorse candidates. So this is not completely foreign territory for us. But in recent history, we have endorsed candidates. We won't be doing that anymore. On the journalism side, though, I mean, I don't see substantive changes. I mean, we want to be the independent voice. We want to continue to do a lot of investigative work. We pride ourselves on our writing and research and sort of the watchdog role. So that's not going to change.
Can we talk about the benefits of, you know, of this having happened for the paper itself? The, you know, newspapers around the country have struggled significantly, you know, after the birth of the internet age and with the advent of online advertising versus classified ads and so on and so forth. You know, is it essentially that you're adding a third revenue stream in the form of donations?
Yeah. It's funny. When I became the editor in 2016, a lot of people said, oh, I love the Tribune. I subscribe. I have for 30 years. What more can I do to support you? And really, the only answer was advertise with us. I mean, there was no other way to show that you loved this institution. Now, I think that there are other avenues that are open to people. Donations, tiny, big. I mean, whatever you feel like you can give. We've had a lot of questions about people with their donor advised funds who want to help us out, which is really remarkable and heartening. I think that this is a very, as you know, Roger, this is a very giving community,
right.
And they do value local news of quality. So, you know, we're going to put that assumption to the test and see what we can do.
On that front, the last time we spoke about this, you and Fraser Nelson, your executive vice president, or I can't remember the title.
Vice president of business innovation.
You two came in and she said that the Tribune was trying to raise basically a big chunk of money.
Yes.
As an endowment, maybe $60 million or some amount of money, I can't remember what the exact number was, toward this endowment that would support the Tribune and local journalism. I guess the question I have is, who is in charge of the fundraising and how's it going?
Fraser is in charge of the fundraising, and she sadly could not be here with us today because
right.
she is speaking with some large foundations and financiers in New York this week. It's going great. We are off to a very, very good start. Our goal is $60 million in 3 years. We'll have some announcement on that by year's end, but we are on pace to make that. Over time, though, our overall goal is $150 million in 15 years, which we know is a very, very heavy lift. But again, I think that people are beginning to understand the value of local news in a new way. Journalism ties into our civic fabric. We cannot function. We can't function as a society without reliable sources of news. And we need a multiplicity of those news stories. And so I do think between the nonprofit Tribune and the Utah Journalism Foundation, we will be able to secure the future for independent news here in Utah forever.
That's an amazing statement. This is going to be such a small turn from a large statement like that, but the print paper remains a big source of revenue. It has been a source of revenue for the paper. It also has been a big cost for the paper. What does the move to nonprofit mean for the physical paper?
As you know, we've discussed before that we have a business relationship with the Deseret News. It's called the Joint Operating Agreement, and we've been in that agreement since the 1950s, so a long time. We've been business partners with them. Over the years, our ownership has changed multiple times. So I don't think that the fact that we're a nonprofit really affects that relationship at all. On the other hand, we are renegotiating the contract between us. It is set to expire in 2020. And really, I think economics are going to dictate, like they always have. It's no secret that our print circulation has declined, and that's resulted in advertisers rethinking whether or not they want to put their advertisements in the paper. Having said that, we're going to have a great paper come Thanksgiving Day. You know, our advertising is very stable on that day. But overall, you know, I think over time, consumer sensibilities are just changing, and they are moving more to digital than to print. So, you know, the nonprofit status, I don't think is fundamentally going to change, but there is this bigger financial industry struggle, and I'm not sure where that's going
to
come down.
Okay. To be determined, basically.
To be determined.
You know, as I mentioned at the outset, maybe this will be where we wrap up, Jen. This is the first legacy paper to do this, and I guess, you know, I mean, you're breaking ground here, but you're also sort of an experiment. What does that feel like, you know, to be sort of setting a new course for newspapers and for journalism in general?
Oh, you know, it's really thrilling. I think it is, though, a reflection of our broader culture in Utah. We are entrepreneurial. We do like to innovate. We try new things. We call it the Utah way. So I don't think that I'm unique in this space. People have tried things here, and we're going to do our very best to make sure that this succeeds. But it is, I mean, as a nonprofit, that doesn't make us all of a sudden financially sustainable. Like, we still have a lot of work to do, but I don't want to dampen the excitement around this moment. I just think that, you know, there's a lot of potential for us to explore. Our team is really excited about it. So far, the early response from our community is overwhelming. So I'm really, really encouraged, and I think this is going to work.
That's Jennifer Napier Pierce, editor of the Salt Lake Tribune. And congratulations again, Jen, on the approval of this nonprofit status.
Thank you so much.
For context on just how unusual the idea of a newspaper going nonprofit is, I called up Joshua Benton, founder and director of the Nieman Journalism Lab at Harvard University. The Nieman Lab studies new trends in media and has an explicit mission of trying to help journalism figure out its future in an internet age. Joshua, thank you very much for making the time today.
Absolutely.
Well, the Salt Lake Tribune announced this week that it has now become the first legacy newspaper to become a 501c3 nonprofit organization. I've got Tribune editor Jennifer Napier Pierce on the show discussing some of what that means for the paper itself. But I'd like, Joshua, to get some broad stroke observations from you on this. What does it mean that a legacy newspaper is becoming a nonprofit? And actually, maybe we could first define what a legacy newspaper is.
So there's never been an issue with creating a nonprofit news organization that has been established for some time. There are hundreds of them across the country, many of them doing really excellent work. There's been a real boom in nonprofit news organizations over the past decade or so.
Right.
What has proven more difficult is taking a for-profit company and then converting it into a nonprofit one. The IRS has traditionally looked askance at that shift, and it's somewhat understandable. You know, a for-profit company that's going to be doing the same thing as it was before, but not paying taxes anymore. You can understand why there might be some skepticism. So over the years, there have been a number of local newspapers that have been interested in taking this path. About 10 years ago, Senator Ben Cardin from Maryland put forward a bill that didn't go anywhere in Congress that would have explicitly made newspapers eligible for nonprofit status. But over the years, the feeling from the IRS had been that this just wasn't a path that newspapers could readily take. What others had done is what has been done at the Tampa Bay Times in Florida and the Philadelphia Inquirer in Pennsylvania, which is that the newspapers themselves remained for profit, but they belong to a nonprofit institution. That has been the sort of workaround that has been possible before. With this decision, assuming that it stands and, you know, is now the official stance of the IRS, lots of newspapers around the country who are facing financial difficulties, which describes most newspapers in the country,
right,
would be able to make this transition, which opens up new streams of potential revenue and makes the role of a newspaper in the community even more explicit as a community service as opposed to a profit driver.
I mean, you're pointing out the fact that newspapers, and we all know that newspapers have been on a decline, and here in Utah we've seen cuts to reporting staff after various other cuts to reporting staff to the Salt Lake Tribune and to other papers around the state under various owners. I mean, is this obviously a lot of newspapers are going to want to do this, is what you're saying. Do you think it's a kind of a new hope for traditional, you know, what we might call traditional journalism in the United States?
Well, I think there are going to be only a limited number of newspapers and newspaper owners who are going to be interested in this sort of a solution. In the biggest issue is that everyone who owns a newspaper now owns a newspaper. To become a nonprofit, they have to give up their ownership of the newspaper and essentially transfer that ownership to a nonprofit board.
Right.
And that is a significant step that not a lot of people are going to be willing to make. You know, if you are a newspaper owner whose wealth is tied up primarily in that newspaper, you know, you're essentially being asked to give all that away. If you are a newspaper chain, which, you know, most large newspapers in the country, which metro newspapers are owned by a large chain, you know, you're a publicly traded company. It's unlikely that you're going to be feeling generous about giving away your newspaper. I think that the specific group of papers that this is going to be most appealing to will be those papers that are still owned by local people, local families, who have some sort of connection to the community, and whose wealth is independent from the ownership of the newspaper, as is the case with the Huntsman's.
Right.
You know, so you might see that in a place like here in Boston, where John Henry, the owner of the Red Sox, also owns the Globe. In Omaha, Warren Buffett owns the Omaha World Herald there. There are a number of cities around the country where you could imagine that happening. And I think another place where you'd see more of it is in smaller communities, you know, a local weekly, a local daily. If you're an owner and you're thinking about what the future is going to be, what the legacy is going to be, creating a local foundation that can be the steward of your work is appealing for some of them, I think.
Are there pitfalls to this? I mean, how uncharted of territory is this, and what might we not be considering in terms of the challenges that going nonprofit for a single newspaper might present, if that makes sense?
I do think that a lot of people who have been interested in this model sometimes don't realize that being nonprofit doesn't mean that you don't have to make money, right? You're being nonprofit just means that you're not seeking to, you know, generate a positive result at the end of the year that you can distribute to shareholders. It still means that you need to raise enough money every year to keep the doors open, to pay for your journalists, to pay for printing or every other cost that goes along with running a newspaper. Most of the nonprofit news organizations that we've seen thrive in the last decade have been digital. There are obviously appealing elements to that. Publishing online doesn't cost nearly as much as publishing a print newspaper. An average newspaper spends more money printing the thing than it does paying reporters and editors and photographers and other journalists. Hmm. So there are going to be some questions about the cost structure when you're taking something that was built up to generate revenue and be a profitable business and try and transition that to a more mission-driven structure. Now, most nonprofit news organizations have a much higher share of their total costs going towards the journalism and a much lower share towards production, revenue generation, ad sales, that sort of thing. It's going to be, I think, an interesting transition for newspapers if more go down this road, how they can make that balance work.
Well, and we're all waiting here to see whether or not how long, I guess, the print edition of the Salt Lake Tribune remains. Prior to this approval by the IRS, there were some questions about whether what a newspaper does could fit inside of what the IRS considers the work of a nonprofit organization. The opinion section, for example, sports coverage, editorial cartoons, and so on. But the IRS, in approving at least this application from the Salt Lake Tribune, didn't really put any restrictions on any of that. What does that mean, the potential fraught nature of the nonprofit application and what newspapers do that includes things like sports coverage, editorial cartoons, and so on?
Right. So there actually are a very limited number of elements that can be part of a 501c3 organization, according to the law, according to Section 501c3. Right. The one that news organizations have traditionally put themselves under is educational. You can have an educational nonprofit. And that's why something like the Tampa Bay Times, for example, is owned by the Poynter Institute, which is a school for journalism. So clearly they are an educational institution that passes the federal standard.
Right.
When you're looking at a large newspaper that, covers the Jazz and does, covers BYU football, there are questions about how that fits in. And frankly, I was surprised to hear that the IRS approved this really without asking any questions, it seemed. I don't know if this had any role in this, but we've all heard about the degree to which the IRS has been defunded, and how they say that they're not able to do audits of wealthy individuals because they simply don't have the funding to be able to do such complicated audits. I kind of wonder if the fact that there were just no questions asked and this was approved quickly without any discussion, that might have been a factor in it. But as far as we know, other than the issue of editorials, the official editorial position of a newspaper, which is something that the Tribune has said they're going to stop doing, there don't seem to be any other significant restrictions. Now, all that said, it will depend on how people react to it. If a Republican or a Democrat or some other politician in Utah decided to push that and say that the Tribune is not following its standards as a nonprofit news organization, they could write a letter to the IRS asking for an intervention. There are ways in which people can try to intervene, and we'll just have to see what the IRS says.
Have there been examples of that happening in other places? I mean, there are, of course, as you pointed out, nonprofit journalism entities out there that do political coverage. Have they had challenges like that? And do we have examples where that's affected or impacted nonprofit journalism institutions?
I am unaware of anything of that kind with the news organization. There certainly have been sort of equivalent things with other types of nonprofit organizations. I mean, think about the famous case with Bob Jones University, where they had nonprofit status and someone appealed to the IRS because they had a ban on interracial relationships, mm-hmm. and they lost their nonprofit status there. I know that there have been questions around various 501c4s and other kinds of nonprofit but politically oriented organizations, whether they stay within their bounds or not. I'm unaware of any sort of direct appeal like this for a news organization.
Okay. Finally, Joshua, I want to ask you more generally about the state of news and news consumption in the United States today. And, how valued is the news as a resource? Sometimes I want to say as a product, but when we're talking about nonprofits, that's not exactly, we're not content versus journalism, I guess, is what I'm getting at. But, how valued is the news and how... we've seen these declines in reporting staff at newspapers around the country. Is the news thriving? Is the news withering? Are you hopeful? Big open-ended question there.
By far, the biggest area under threat in journalism is local news. Local newspapers, local television stations, local radio stations, they thrived because they had some version of a local monopoly. There, you know, Salt Lake City was unusual in having two daily newspapers, but even then it only had two, didn't have 20 daily newspapers. You know, there are only so many broadcast licenses to go around, and they were all geographically limited. That meant that they had a lot of market power that they could use to build sustainable and, in many cases, extremely profitable businesses. Online, that ability to push away competition goes away. And what we've seen is a big shift in news consumption away from local media and towards national media. You know, the New York Times, the Washington Post, these large news organizations that are having enormous success in attracting digital subscriptions, are making money, are doing well. That's one vector that, through which the news interest has traveled. But in local news, it's just a much bigger problem. I think it's going to be, in the end, a combination of a number of things that will try to fill the void that's been created by the decline and perhaps in some places eventually the closure of major local newspapers. It's going to be a bit of public radio stations. It's going to be nonprofit news organizations, you know, investigative units that are attached to local journalism schools. It's going to be hopefully some local digital-only sites that can pick their spots and attack a certain part of the news problem. And hopefully that what remains of newspapers, you can still do the kind of accountability work and watchdog reporting that is important in a democracy.
Well, Joshua, I want to just say thank you for taking the time and thanks for joining us on the show.
Absolutely.
And again, Joshua Benton is the founder and director of the Nieman Journalism Lab at Harvard University. So how long have you been a reader of the Salt Lake Tribune? What does your local paper mean to you? Is the physical paper as important to you as the watchdog journalism the reporters provide? Basically, how do you get your news, and why does it matter to you? Send an email to comments@kcpw.org, and we might call you up to record your message. Alternatively, you can record it on your own using the voice memo function on your smartphone and send that in. Again, the email address is comments@kcpw.org. In the Hive is a production of KCPW, a listener-supported, nonprofit public radio resource. You can find podcasts of this and all of our local shows at kcpw.org, where you can also make a pledge of support. I'm Roger McDonough. Thanks again for tuning in. Both Sides of the Aisle is coming up next.